Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and today we're doing another Hanging with the Hearns. I'm joined by my teenage son, Leo. Leo, how are things?
Oh, it's all going good. Nothing too much going on. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Interesting few days. We had a full moon this week, did you know?
Oh, I definitely heard from you at least.
Yeah.
The day after.
Yeah, it was a full moon on Tuesday night, and Erin, the 18-month, 19-month-old, 20-month-old, whatever she is now at this point, decided to howl at the moon from about 4 in the morning till 6:30, which was a bit of a nightmare. So I was a bit wrecked the next day, and still dragging on. But yeah, the little ones are great crack when they don't sleep, and I'm pretty cranky as well, haven't I then?
I don't know how you guys survived the like months upon months of having to wake up from like 12. And you did four times over, technically. four times over. Like, why did you subject yourself to that so many times? Like, you don't love it that much, do you?
Is it that not clear that I love kids and that I love you so much, you know? That I, of course, I would go through endless sleepless nights for you.
Right. I think there's a bit of a difference between loving kids and then choosing to sacrifice what? Over 4 years, because like realistically they're not sleeping well until at least one, so sacrificing so like somewhere around 4 to 6 years of your life, like sleepless nights.
I like know that... when you put it that way, I think it's called there is a sort of amnesia in it that you you forget, and then you go, well, yeah, let's go have some more. And but you're all great, and yeah, the exhaustion is hard, but it's all part of it. And it is hard, there's no doubt about it. Kids, a toddler that age, you know, are very challenging at times, and particularly when there's no logic. And it's really interesting to have both a teenager in the house and a toddler at the two most illogical stages in their lives.
Wow, thank you very much. No, I think I was being a bit critical there. Obviously, there is the stuff that, like, you have the sleepless nights. But then there's the moments, like, Erin learned to say me for the first time this evening. And she was just running around the house shouting it, like, so joyfully. And I think those are kind of the moments that you love when you have kids. And whatever, there's the good and the hard. But in the end, the good outweighs the bad. And you definitely want people continuing your legacy anyways. So, like, whatever works, you know?
Yeah, the fear of annihilation, isn't that it?
Oh,
yeah.
God, that's a big one of yours, isn't it?
Yeah. No, but it is amazing for those moments when they do, the little ones, when they say something like me. Or the other cute one at the moment is we had a new arrival in the house as well this week, the elf on the shelf.
Cute is a bit of a stretch.
But the elf on the shelf has the 6-year-old and 5-year-old in running around in absolute glee and excitement. And it's an interesting one, all right. The whole our elf doesn't monitor though, and it's not too much of a get up to too much, which isn't too arduous. But it was also a good week for Waterford hurling, which is very important. I was literally shouting the house down last Saturday night when they beat Kilkenny in the All Ireland semi final. Yeah, you can confirm. Would you give up on them though halfway through the first half? You did, you have no interest at all.
Right. Yeah. So I didn't sit with you for the rest of that half then.
For 10 minutes, you went off for the second half though.
Well, that's some more important things to do. I kept an eye on the score.
Yeah, you did, yeah. The other thing we did nice this week is you came with me as I went for a swim in the sea, and and you got a hot chocolate. It looked pretty cold, didn't it?
Just a little bit. I truly don't understand you. Like, you went in for, what was it, 25 minutes?
Like,
okay, I understand going in for like 5 minutes to like get invigorated by the sea and then run out into the heatier car, but you like went in for 25 minutes and then we had a walk. Though, to be fair, you did a run back to the car like a little kid at the very end of it.
I could see him hopping
outside the door, trying to get in.
Yeah, it is an incredible feeling. Like, as I was saying to you before, beforehand. You really have to psych yourself up for it and almost like go for an out-of-body experience going, I'm not going to feel this. And you just, you know, go in and you feel this utter, you know, pain of cold. And then it goes, it subsides. And I love the open swimming of it. It's really, it's a lovely feeling. And it's stunning to see the towers, the Poolbeg towers and... You know, from that angle, and the incinerator. I won't mention that, but I fought for years against that bloody incinerator. It is an incredible thing to do, and I feel very privileged to do it. But it was nice how you joined, and it was nice of you to watch me as I jumped in. There was no convincing you to get in, was there?
Okay, I'll make you a deal here now. Not this week, but the next week that I'm with you, that you're going in, and I'm home and don't have plans, I'll go in with you to the sea.
Ooh, that's going to be interesting to see. Another thing that to move on this week, which was very important actually, which happened today, and it's definitely a change of mood. The Inner City Helping Homeless did a action of highlighting homelessness, the deaths of homeless people at the Dáil today, and they've set up a campaign called "Don't Forget Me." And it's about the rise in homeless deaths on the streets of Dublin and around the country. And they're trying to personalise it to show that these are real people who are losing their lives. And of course, they're saying that 56 people have died in homeless services this year. So you can go to their Twitter handle at Don't Forget Me Ire, and upload your support and go into hashtag Don't Forget Me. Very important at this time. And of course, we also have the lifting of the ban on evictions that was introduced for the temporary lockdown. That's going to happen in a few days' time, which of course is going to lead to more homelessness. And there's a lot of people in serious stress in the rental sector. And it just seems to me utterly wrong that we're not extending out that ban on evictions for a longer period of time. So, you know, it's really just wrong. And, you know, if you can, contact the minister, contact your local councillors and TDs and ask them to extend the ban on evictions for at least another 6 months to give people some sort of security, and go over to Inner City Helping Homeless, hashtag Don't Forget Me. The one thing I wanted to talk about today, Leo, was the article that was in the Irish Times, and it's a topic that we talked about already on this, was the whole issue of young people and how they're kind of doing through lockdown, the whole sense of well-being. And it was an article written by Jennifer O'Connell, and it's the headline is Ireland's Teenage Pariahs, We're Reeling at Breaking Point Now. And it talks about how teenagers have, you know, lost out on rites of passage, not having a voice, things like the restrictions in order to mind family members. And there were some very interesting statistics in it as well, which I was quite struck by. And for example, they cite a publication in the UK which showed that 1 in 4 16 to 25 year olds had significant levels of mental distress. A study in Australia by UNICEF found that a proportion of 13 to 17 year olds, so that's your category, Leo, in your category, that the proportion of those coping well with life had collapsed from 81% in January, who said they were coping well, to just 45% in April. And they're saying that in terms of life satisfaction, with the pandemic, that this has changed, and there's a surge in the number of young people who were depressed, felt lonely, or were tense. And research by the CSO, which is in Ireland, in July, captured that 1 in 3 young adults felt downhearted or depressed at least some of the time. And Jigsaw's services for face-to-face counselling rose by 47% in July, on the same month last year, 46% in August. And the highest number of referrals was in the 15 to 17 year old age cohort. And family problems became one of the top 5 presenting issues, and anxiety and low mood. So there's a lot of people struggling to sleep. In your age group, in your generation, I asked you to have a look at that, and what did you think, or how does it make you feel? What do you think of it?
I think personally, a lot of what it is just backing up what I believe a lot of teenagers already know with statistics, really. Like, I feel in general, as teenagers, like, we know how much we've missed out on. We know that, like, people are doing a lot worse. I think it's definitely become... I think people are being slightly more open about it. Like, you know how like, it's always complained about, like, oh, social media glorifies everything that's going on, blah, blah, blah. I think there have been more people talking about the fact that, like, lockdown is hard for you and it's okay for it to be hard for you and that other people are in the same spot as you, which I think is very important because, again, the overarching feeling during lockdown and during COVID is, like, feeling alone and feeling lonely. So I think a lot of the time knowing that you have people there in the same situation with you is helpful in some ways, I think. And again, I think there's a lot of pressure on us. Like, there's the mix of being blamed for, like, house parties and all that when that's fully just not going on anywhere near as much as they're saying. And also, I think the fact that people, like, are feeling bad and have, like, a lot of bad things going on, but there's the whole mentality of, like, oh, I'm so lucky, all these people have it so much worse, which, like, I personally am very lucky, and there are people that have it a lot worse, but I think when that's the only thing that you have going through your head to, like, stop you from thinking like this, that's really harmful because you're not addressing the things that are going on with you and you're just, like, pushing your problems away and invalidating them by saying, like, oh, but look at such and such, they have it so much worse, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's there, it was, you know, it's hard for me to think about it in a way that, like, your generation is and your group, you know, is so particularly affected by it and so, you know, hard hit. And, like, I do feel for you that, you know, it's such restrictions, and you talk about, like, coming, you know, going into school and, you know, being masked up all day and, you know, not being able to, you know, talk to your friends in the same way within school, that you've become more isolated within school. Would that be right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people definitely have. I think it's a big thing of, like, feeling it, that it's less personal with a mask or something. Like, it's just harder for people in school. And for me, at least, I don't mind wearing a mask. I can talk to people fine when wearing a mask. It doesn't make much difference to me. But what I think really makes a difference, actually, is the fact that all our tables are split up 1 meter apart from each other, every single one. Like, obviously, it follows the COVID guidelines. That's what needs to be happening. But it's the exact same tables as we had in exam situations, when the goal was so that we could talk to nobody and so that we stayed quiet doing our own work. And now we're in the seating of our exam situations the whole time, and they're like, oh, everyone work in groups. And people have been like, well, how can I, well, like, it's much harder to work in groups because I'm, like, talking to these four people that are, like, 4 meters away from me. I think that's really what's a lot less personal. And, like, you're just literally not sitting beside someone and having someone to chat to as often, which, like, again, it's stuff that people usually take for granted, and suddenly it's just not happening, you know?
Yeah, I do know. I think back to my school days, which were a long, long way ago. And if I can remember them through the fog of life that's happened since, it was absolutely, yeah. You sat literally beside somebody in their ear, and, you know, they were your buddy or they weren't your buddy, but still, you know, you chatted to them, you know, talked during the class, you know, played tricks on other people, you got tricks played on you, you know, chatted to them during the break of the class.
Yeah.
You're saying that's...
Sorry, go on.
No, go on.
I think what it is as well is it contributes to a lot of, like, not participating, because, like, you don't have people to discuss it with, so therefore you feel like you're sitting in your seat quiet. So then, let's say the teacher asks the class to say something, you're already sitting in your seat quiet, not talking to anyone else. You're like, oh, why would I participate in this? So I think it's led to classes being a lot more quiet as well. And again, I especially feel bad for the first years that are like just getting to know people, and this is supposed to be their like social year where they like get to talk to people and get to know people. Then again, I feel bad for our year, like fourth year, they're doing their best, but the point of fourth year is trips and like going out and doing stuff, which surprise surprise is slightly hard to do when we're literally in level 5 of lockdown. Though that's we're back to level 3 now.
Yeah, and I am struck though by that, you know, thinking, and it is important to think about, and this is obviously particular for, you know, second level students, and as you're saying, first years, that whole impact on school as an experience, as a social experience, and, you know, as a forming experience. And I was struck in that article, it did talk about that, that, you know, and that, you know, kind of young people go through, we all have to go through these developmental stages, and a key part at this stage that, you know, particularly your age in terms of, you know, that mid-teen age, is that whole socialising and developing social skills and, you know, that need to be part of a tribe and engagement. And school is, for most people, that's where that happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think definitely, like, it's led to a lot of people being more isolated, having less social interactions, and being more afraid of social interactions, because it's, again, like, you're told to stay away from people, not get too close, don't hang out outside of such and such. So people are genuinely afraid of social interactions a lot of the time now, I think. Which sounds extreme, but I think it is the case. Like, we're losing out on a lot of things. Like, even over the past, the first lockdown, so many graduations were missed, so many like TY trips were missed, so much was missed for teenagers and kids who, like, this is supposed to be whatever the social time of our life. Like, I'm sure you during lockdown, you missed out on a lot less than I probably missed out. Like, obviously, you weren't seeing some people as much.
Well, the joke is, but it's not really a joke, that if you've young kids under the age of 3, you've been in lockdown since they've been born level 5 anyway, so it's not really much of a difference. And there's a large element of truth to that, in that, you know, your life is very restricted in the sense of, you know, you're focused around them. So it's, you know, it's not the same loss in that sense. And it's not a key developmental stage for me, you know. I'm over the hill at this point.
Yeah, fair enough. I do think something else to say about lockdown, though, is it's given a lot of people time to reflect on themselves. And I feel like a lot of people have been able to become more themselves and be more confident in their style and themselves in general. Like, look at recently, Elliot Page came out as trans. And like, again, what he said was like, it was a journey of self-discovery through lockdown, I'm pretty sure. I can't remember the exact quote. But like, a lot of it is giving people the time and space to actually come to terms with themselves and understand themselves better. So I do think there's a positive impact in that sense. But then also, of course, there's people that, like, would rather not be left alone with their own thoughts, you know?
And in situations like that where people are, you know, coming out or, you know, going through that process, that they would have support around them, that it's actually a time where you need people around you.
I definitely think so. And a big problem is, like, there's a lot of parents that simply aren't supporting out there, so it's a very scary time to be coming out in that sense, I'd say. Like, what if you're discovering yourselves but you have very homophobic or transphobic parents? And like, it's not so far away, like, there are many people still like that. And then, like, you're discouraging your child and making them afraid to come out to you, and then they have to force inside themselves, and it's just a whole bad cycle. But I know it's happening to so many people during this time, because, like, if you don't have positive relationships with your family, especially in the sense of, like, wanting to come out to them or something, I think that's a big issue as well.
And in a way, then things are forced, and people who are in, and it does raise a wider thing of, you know, and it's come up, you know, the figures are there in terms of, for example, domestic violence, that, you know, relationships have been strained as people have been, you know, unable to have breaks from each other, unable to escape from each other. You know, this forced lockdown has come with huge mental health and relationship costs. And, you know, as I said, even in terms of that domestic violence increase. And I think it's interesting because I was struck by the, you know, and it's on Twitter a lot, this whole transphobia and the, you know, this kind of, transphobia going on, you know, that people and, you know, people who are trans, I see them, you know, talking about, you know, they just want to be respected as, you know, who they are and what, you know, what does it matter to other people, you know, how they are. It's like, it's that kind of, it is, as it's like homophobia in terms of people being gay. It's, isn't it, in that sense of that they're feeling and they are experiencing like real discrimination. And it seems to me, I was talking to you about it, like, what's your kind of sense of where that's out now? It's like we're at a point similar to where, you know, gay and lesbian people were coming out in that sense, or, you know, we're trying to hopefully break through that discrimination in society. Or is there more of a, do you think it's harder for trans people? Is there more of a backlash going on at the moment?
Well, I think, like, even in the sense of what you were saying at the start there, of, like, people being like, it's my life, why do you care? It nearly goes back to the repeal the eighth kind of thing, with people being like, it's literally my body, why do you have a say on it, you know? But I think a lot of what it is, again, back in the day or whatever, like, not too long ago, it was very dangerous for people to be gay or lesbian or bisexual or whatever. Whereas that's a more accepted thing now. And there's still many, many homophobes out there. But again, I think it's becoming something similar with trans people. Now, I do think it's a lot more accepting. Like, there's a lot of support systems out there. But really, it just feels like people are somehow afraid of anything different. And, like, it's not even different. They're literally just human beings. But it's just like some internalized, well, not even internalized transphobia, just outward transphobia of people not being able to deal with other people for some reason. I honestly, like, it doesn't make sense to me. It's not their life. It's not negatively affecting them in any way, but obviously it is, in the sense that, like, they're giving out such a backlash. Because there is a big backlash going out against it, you know?
Yeah. And you were showing me earlier something which I think was interesting, was in terms of, you know, for us to educate ourselves about, you know, how trans people want to be referred to. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of what it is trans terms and stuff like that have only really become, like, well-known recently. So there's now outdated ones. So, like, people would say, like, FTM, which is female to male, but it would be now AFAB, which is assigned female at birth, because it's not female to male. That's just the gender they were assigned with. They were never female. They were always male, but they were just assigned female at birth. So it's terms like that. And then there's the obvious stuff like he was a she or something like that. It's you just don't say that. Like, there's a lot of definite terms, and there's lots of resources online. So if you look up, like, trans terminology resources, you can find my stuff out there with actually up-to-date terms. I think that's definitely something very important to make trans people just feel accepted, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that is very important. Like, in the sense of them, you know, and us all making an effort to, you know, treat people, which I, you know, it, for me, the starting point has to be that, you know, everybody needs to be treated with respect, you know, and you start with from where they are. And, you know, it just, it's so, you know, that, you know, homophobia, transphobia, you know, discrimination, it just, it creates such, you know, horrible negativity and hurt, you know, and how it hurts people. And it's like people feel threatened by it. They're threatened. And obviously it's a reflection of their own insecurities.
I think, again, to me, like, transphobes and homophobes, it nearly reminds me of Donald Trump supporters in the way that, like, they don't back down from their ideas. It's extremely hard to get them to change their way of thinking. I think is because a lot of it is deep-rooted in their sense of self for some reason. Like, they base their self-worth off of, like, oh, I'm a woman, this person can't possibly also be a woman, or something like that. I think, as you've seen, like, Donald Trump, what he did was he got a lot of people completely invested in himself, and, like, what's the word? A cult of personality. Mm. People just, like, completely being enthralled with him, and, like, in the way of they would defend him to the end of the earth for some reason. And it's extremely, extremely hard to change their mind, you know?
Yeah, and do you think that for young people who are trans in Ireland now, that, you know, do you think, is it hard for them to come out?
I think it really depends on your situation. Like, if you have a good support system, people you trust, you know other people that have come out before, and you have a family that, like, would be supporting, then it's extreme. Well, okay, not extremely easy. It's nearly never easy to come out, but having a support system and people that you truly trust makes it a lot easier. But then there's people in the isolated situations with families that wouldn't be supporting, but, like, they still need to come out because it's something very important to them. Obviously, it's their gender. And I think that makes it that much harder. But I still think, compared to 10 years ago, yes, it's definitely, like, easier to come out as trans. But, like, it's never easy. Also, I'm speaking of this as a cis guy. Like, I don't know the full transgender experience because I'm not transgender, you know?
Mm.
So obviously they know the hardships of it a lot better than I do.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're not trying to speak on behalf of, you know, them either, that we're just trying to have the conversation that hopefully will, you know, support people and create a better environment. And I suppose, you know, just for anybody who is listening to this and does require support, Jigsaw is available in terms of giving advice and mental health support to young people aged 12 to 25. You can find more at jigsaw.ie. Also, spunout.ie offers information on a range of topics for young people and a list of support services at spunout.ie. So you can get support and advice there, and as well for parents that are trying to find out, and in terms of support. So to move on to our other thing we were thinking about talking about
any other adjectives you got there,
any other adjectives about what we can natter about, philosophy and Japan. And we had a throwaway comment. Our throwaway comment, you said someone you knew was doing Japanese, and then you were saying, oh yeah, I'm actually interested in Japanese culture. And I was like, really? Okay, that's interesting. So what were you interested in about Japanese culture?
Well, it was more just the fact that, like, there's such a difference between, like, Japanese and Eastern culture in general compared to Western culture. I think there's a much bigger focus on, like, individualism in Western cultures than there is in Eastern cultures. Like, collectivism is a very big thing, and it's the people around you and your connections and your family and your community is such a big thing in Japan. And I definitely think it's the whole, like, everyone for themselves, capitalism, like, blah, blah, mindset in Western countries. And, like, America is a prime example of that, you know? Like, literally, people's pensions, I'm not sure if you know this, but people's pensions are invested into the stock market.
Mm.
And that just in itself blows my mind, personally, I think.
Why does that blow your mind?
Because it's your pension going into the stock market. Like, that means that, like, Actually, that's a big reason why Donald Trump talked about the stock market so much, because he has a lot of older supporters, right?
Yeah.
And their pensions rely on the stock market. So if he's like, oh, the stock market's going great, blah, 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 that then means their pension funds are going up. And so that's why he had such a big focus on that, and like why him as like a businessman. Also, he's a terrible businessman, by the way. He was only chosen for The Apprentice because he was a good TV personality. Do not think he's a good businessman, just to put that out there.
Yeah, and but that idea of tying to the stock market is an interesting one, because, you know, like, you know, why is that important? Like, what does it matter if it's tied to the stock market or not?
Because, okay, I don't have a very good education in, like, America's business stock market. But the stock market is, like, money that goes up and down. And a lot of the time is just invested into big corporations that'll get them the most money back. Like, it's not going into individual business or an actual, like, safe place. Like, it fluctuates yearly.
It's so much reliant
on capitalism,
like. Yeah, and reliant on what happens, and of course not invested either in useful things like in building housing or providing health infrastructure or actual, you know, huge ways to use their funds. But you're absolutely right, and also it creates that individualization and people following the up and down of stocks and shares, rather than actually, you know, how is society doing. And, you know, that idea of collectivism, what does collectivism mean to you?
Well, okay, I'm not particularly educated in it, but I think, like, to me at least, collectivism is like a much like seeing yourself as an us rather than an I. Like, a lot of it is, again, as I said, it's communities and like the people that live near you and the people that are around you. There's a lot more focus on like collectivism, and your life is lived through other people, and a lot of what you try and do is like support people around you and stuff like that. And I think it is just something very different in Japan and Eastern cultures in general compared to Western cultures.
Yeah, and there's no doubt, like, in terms of, you know, materialism, and, you know, we're coming up this time of year at Christmas, and we've seen, of course, the shops have opened, and, you know, people are trying to get their things, and of course we'll get things for Christmas and Santa will deliver as well, in as much as he can. And the, you know, it's still, though, the culture here is very much, I think it's so tied up with that buying things and people's sense of themselves, their sense of, you know, how they feel good about themselves, as a way of feeling good about themselves, is so tied up with the consumerism and materialism, like it is. And it's so empty as well. And
yeah, I think, like,
and unfulfilling. And
yeah, no, definitely. I think something that, like, has become very popular recently, especially through quarantine, is like people going on online shopping sprees and just like using that as a way to like feel happy or like whatever. Like, I think that was a really big thing. Well, is a really big thing. Like, so much online shopping going on. Again, materialism, trying to build your self-worth or just like get some scrap of happiness out of buying stuff, you know?
And of course it's false in the sense that it doesn't make you happy.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Like, you know, of course they say, you know, temporarily it'll make you happy, but it's like, you know, and there's a drug and all that. And of course it highlights inequalities as well. Some people can afford to do big shopping sprees and other people then can't, and how they feel about that and their inability. And of course spend money that they don't have and, you know, go to loan sharks. And it's also, of course, Japan is very interesting at a much broader level in terms of equality, that it is a much more equal country, and decisions it makes around taxes, of course, are very important for that. They tax wealth, they tax high income, so they have that whole idea of redistribution. And it's interesting. I was wondering, a question came to my head. Does your generation, and do you talk about socialism at all?
I think,
like, the idea of an alternative to capitalism, or does it, because obviously in the mainstream media, you know, socialism is still broadly this, you know, dirty word, and every time you bring it up or if you raise it, you know, you're seen as somehow defending Russia, communism, or you're, you know, just literally someone whose head is in the clouds. And
So I think, at least, what there is there's a lot of anti-capitalism rhetoric. Maybe not specific alternatives, like there is talk about socialism. I think communism even more, because it's such a buzzword and everyone knows it, you know? Whereas, like, people might not understand socialism as much.
Do you mean there's talk about communism, or people are just aware of
it? Yeah, people are like, oh, I'm a communist, blah, 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 when it's just, like, general buzzword to, like, be different somehow. It's weird. But I definitely think there's a lot of anti-capitalism rhetoric, and I hope that, like, we can change and be different. But what I feel like there's going to be is, like, our generation's a lot more accepting, whatever, but we're born into this world that is, like, so based off capitalism, everything's tied to it, that, like, you're still going, like, by the time I'm your age, or even in my 20s or my 30s, you're only going to be in your, like, 60s, right? Which isn't that, like, crazy of an age. Like, we might, I know, no, like, what I'm trying to say is, like, we may come in and there may be, like, more of us who are more accepting and want to make a change, but there's still gonna be the older generation that's, like, so set in capitalism and everything that's going on that, like, I think capitalism is so rooted in our culture and our society and our world as a whole that, like, getting it completely out is just not feasible, full stop. But I think what maybe there will be, I think there might be more of a focus on, like, local business, and maybe there'll be more, like, genuine entrepreneurs trying to help people. I'd like to hope that it's more of a generation supporting other people, but I also know that I'm basing this a lot off the people I surround myself with and, like, the people I'm friends with, and I know that the majority, not the majority, but a lot of the population just don't care. They don't really care about what's going on, which is a pretty bleak thing, but they don't.
Yeah, it's kind of, I think, you know, it's in a way, you know, with the climate marches, for example, and you've said this before, on our Hanging with the Hearns podcast, now that we're in episode 3, we do exist, that, you know, that you are the most aware generation in a way, you know, you're the most critical generation, you're the generation that's questioning, that has so much information, and there's clearly a progressive, you know, you might call it broadly left leaning, you know, sense, as you're saying yourself, probably huge amount of anti-capitalism, a sense of, you know, this system is wrong, and clearly in terms of the environment, what it's doing in particular, but also the inequalities and poverty and racism, and, you know, you're very much, you know, opposed and trying to propose a more socially just world, and many of us have been doing that for a long time. But I think that there is a much greater proportion, and the evidence is showing that younger people are more, do you know what I mean, supportive of social justice and ideas that are alternatives. And so I think that there's that as that becomes a political force, that yes, you will be in your, when you go, you know, in 5 years, you know, less than that, I was going to say in 5 years' time, you'll be in your early 20s. Yes, you will. But actually, in 2 years' time, you'll be able to vote, you know?
Yeah.
That in, you're 16, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I was going, is he still 15? Is he 16? Oh my God. That you'll be able to vote. And so that's a very short space of time. Your generation, your group, can actually have a very big influence. And it's a way of changing things. And I think that there's a lot, I get a lot of hope from that. And I get a lot of hope that there's people in their 20s and their 30s who really want to see big change and are going to vote differently. And politicians will have to react to that and respond to that. And I think that, you know, the crisis that we're facing are not going away. And so the question, I think, is very much why I asked about, you know, is socialism been talked about? Like, the question is, well, what's the alternative? And I think your idea, and it's something, you know, that I've been looking at, even like cooperatives, for example. Like, is there ways of creating alternative approaches that aren't like somehow so people see that it's so far out there, it's not achievable. But is there ways of organizing society on the basis of supporting each other, working with each other, helping with each other?
Yeah, I definitely think one thing before I get into that, I want to say that like there is a lot of anti-capitalism rhetoric. Not rhetoric. There's a lot of people like basically being against capitalism. But I think something that's happened is like, as I said, we're a very capitalist society. So what happens is people are against it, but they feel like it's so rooted in. Like people being like, oh, Amazon sucks. Like there's so many bad things about it. But then it's the only place that they can find a specific thing they want to get. So therefore they have to get it from Amazon, but they feel really bad about it. I think there's just so many things like that that pile up that like people feel bad about doing all this, but they also feel like there isn't an alternative. So I think that there needs to be alternatives presented that are like, as you said, feasible, don't seem that crazy, and like are easily accessible, because like not in some obscure scientific paper that like suggests the perfect way to fix everything. It needs to be something that people can easily see and is like passed through the public and explainable, because I think again in like whatever the like fancy scientific community or like political community, there's nearly gatekeeping. Like there's some level of not wanting or like not expecting normal people to be able to understand what they're saying, even though they could just alter their words slightly and suddenly it would be so much more accessible, you know. I think accessibility and being able to bring your ideas to a general public and get the support from a general public, that's going to be something very important.
I think that's a good place for us to draw a close today, Leo. I think that, you know, that's a really, it's a good challenge to all of us that how do we actually communicate alternatives in a way that are, you know, realistic and acceptable and people can understand and young people can engage with. I think that's a real challenge. And yeah, we need to take up that challenge. And I think that, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff there. Thanks a million for coming on again today.
Thanks for having me on. It was good. I enjoyed this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, good. So we might get to number four?
Maybe. Do we get our own spin-off show at some point? Like, just completely outward.
Come on, like Hanging with the Hearns podcast?
Yeah, just specifically.
Well, you see, it's kind of like the faithful Reboot Republic listeners would probably feel betrayed if I did a spin-off. They'd be like, oh my God, we have to set up another stream to listen to you in that other forum, whereas this just comes in the Reboot feed when they, you know, listen. So I think it's like a feel I'm giving back to the Reboot listeners.
Gracing them with your presence, right? Okay, we'll finish up then before you get too grandiose.
And on finishing, we'd like you to encourage, as you did for a while in Reboot, but it's hard to keep up with these things when you commit to do something, then you forget to do it, and then you go, oh crap, I forgot to do that. So something you can do to encourage you for active citizenship, and if you want to take some action, which we encourage, to change our world around us, the Stop Climate Chaos campaign is organizing a Join Our TD Lobby, a TD lobby for faster and fairer climate change. And they are doing a Meet Your TDs via Zoom on 7th of December, should I say. So if you want to get involved, go to Leo.
StopClimateChaos.ie.
Very good, very good. Okay, so we leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us. And remember, as always, please, we need your support. Become a patron, sign up for whatever you can, €2, €3, €5, €10, €20 a month, to keep these podcasts cost to produce. And we need to keep the show running. And we know that you like them. We know that you listen to them. So please, please, please become a patron. Sign up to Tortoise, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And that's it, Leo.
That's it. There we go. All done.
Well done, Sloan. See you soon.
Bye.